When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
Before we get started with this episode, I want to let you know that there is a special expanded version of this episode on Patreon, specifically for our Patreon supporters. So if you go to Patreon, Patreon.com and search Neverland Podcast or go /Neverland Podcast, you can find our Patreon page. You can also find it at NeverlandPodcast.com. I have links to our Patreon page. Go and become a supporter to get a special extended cut of this episode exclusive to our Patreon supporters. So with that, let's get on with the show.
You're listening to a Weeby Geeks Network podcast.
Merry Christmas!
What is this?
Up to Neverland!
Ho, 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 ho! Come in and know me better, man! Ho, ho!
Merry, Merry Christmas! Merry, Merry Christmas! Merry, Merry Christmas! Merry, Merry Christmas! Oh, what a Merry Christmas Day!
Take your pixie out of your pockets, Neverlanders! Sprinkle some of that pixie dust around. Use the Force and fly to Neverland with me. I'm Jeremy. I'm your head Lost Boy around here. You can call me the Spider Pan. I've got a Pixie and a Lost Boy here with me. Lost Boy Phil, we haven't been on the show in a little while.
I haven't. I'm a Lost Boy Wookiee today.
And then Pixie Heather.
Hi.
Or we call her the Bio Nerd. So, and we call you the Kryptonian.
That's
so
exactly right.
But all right, we've got a lot of fun coming up later in the show. We'll be Eric and Jonathan Johnson. You all know Lost Boy Eric, of course, but Jonathan Johnson of Diz Radio will be joining us later. We're going to talk about some Rankin Bass later on in the show. Yes, a great new book that just came out that Jonathan Johnson had a chance to participate in with a Rankin Bass historian. We're going to learn some stuff about Rankin Bass and just have some fun talking about all the great specials, even a bunch of specials that I ain't even seen yet. So this book is available. 50-year anniversary of Frosty the Snowman is this year.
Oh, cool.
Nice. So he'll be on later to talk about that. But for now, there's this little independent film that I really think people should... No one seems to be giving this a chance. No one seems to ever have heard of these movies. This small little independent film was something... What is it? Like a War in Space or something. What is this called again?
Oh, Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah, Battlestar Star Trek, right? I don't know. It. Some little small film that no one's ever heard of, but maybe you should just give it a chance, because these small films sometimes are really... Okay, yeah, we're talking Star Wars.
Okay.
It's the oldest stupid running gag we've had. Just like, yeah, just a little independent film called The Avengers just happened to have come out, you know. So, yeah, we had a new Star Wars film. Now, I'm going to tell you now, we are not going to spoil anything for you this week. We just want to lightly touch and give you a review. Next week, though, I'm going to put a group together, and we're going to just have some fun talking about this movie and breaking it down and all the stuff. So you have plenty of time to get a chance to go out and see it, because I know you want to.
There'll be spectacle, there'll be fantasy, there'll be daring do and stuff like you would never see.
Hey, a movie!
Yeah, we're gonna be a movie!
Starring everybody!
And me!
Boy, I wish I were you people seeing this for the first time!
Kermit, I got a great picture of the chicken!
Oh, good!
And if you don't want to, then you should probably go anyway, because you might be surprised, because you might realize, you know what, this is good. Because this was fun!
A lot of fun.
This was a heck of a lot of fun. And people have, you know, we were just discussing it there, that people have said, well, it seems to be a lot of fan service. Well, what's the problem with some fan service?
Yeah. I think we've earned our dues. It's been, what, 40 years?
Yeah, it's been over 40 years since the original film.
Yeah, so I say, you know, service the fans. I think that's what it should be done anyway. Yeah.
You got to make a movie that you give the fans some stuff that they will enjoy with some new things. And lots of new things in this.
Yeah.
Little nods to help wrap up the entire saga.
Oh, 40 years. I mean, that's not something to sneeze at.
Yeah, they brought a lot of things full circle for us that just made us smile. And I clapped. I clapped a lot.
I clapped, I cried.
I clapped, she cried.
There you go.
There was a lot of stuff, and silly things that I've seen is that some people say, well, there's enough story in here for two movies, and yeah, in a way, because maybe J.J. Abrams should have done the second movie too.
I think so. But all that being said, I will say this to Mr. Johnson here. In some ways, maybe the reason why there was so much fan service, and this is not to put the man down, the last film, but because in some ways, that last film was almost trying to do some completely new things.
Yeah. Which is cool.
Which is fine, except that it almost felt like, at least in the beginning of that film, the last one, it seemed like they were saying, we're going a completely different direction. And then by the end of it, it was like, never mind all we just told you the last two hours. So in this one, it would seem like they were almost trying to make up for all that.
Yeah,
like,
they kind of corrected a few movies.
Yeah, and so therefore, that's why he had two films in one. And unless you're going to do... Skywalker, Rise of Skywalker, unless you're going to do part A, part B, I don't necessarily like all that myself, to have to see two films to see one. I don't really like that. So, I mean, I'll do it, obviously, because I hate when you go to see a film, like when I went and saw The Avengers, I really hate that, like suddenly you get to 10 more minutes in a movie and you're like, oh, crap, there's no way they're going to be able to do this. There's no way. So I always hate that in a film. But that being said, I'm glad they didn't do that. Yeah. I'd rather have a nearly 3-hour film than to have two and a half hour films. That's just me.
It makes sense, though, sometimes when you're adapting a book to do that. But then, of course, it's a Star Wars. You're not adapting a book. Just
Lord of the Rings, that makes sense to me.
Yeah. You know? Well, except The Hobbit did not need to be split up like that at all.
Maybe.
They could have done that in 1 3-hour movie.
I agree.
And then the entire story.
I agree.
Without all the extra baloney that ruined that movie, those three films.
That, yeah.
But now we're talking Star Wars, though. We're talking Star Wars, and this, it moves really fast.
Yeah.
It really does. You do not have a chance to get up and go to the bathroom because there's. But you know, Return of the Jedi. I've always kind of thought of that as it sets up. So here's the story of this movie. Boom! Let's go on an adventure and just have a lot of fun. That's what this did. It came right even in the opening crawl that tells you the setup of the story.
Yeah, you almost don't
here's
need...
the story. Boom, let's go have some fun.
Yeah, you almost don't need to have too much of a break, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Except maybe physically. But I just mean in the sense that some folks were complaining an awful lot about there's too much of this, too much of this. Just sit back, relax,
and
sit
it's
on back
Star
for a
Wars.
Year of tale of a wonderful trip. And I enjoyed
it's
it.
It's Star Wars. You're just supposed to kick back and have fun.
To me, this is the most Star Wars film
of these new ones.
They had the same feel.
And I've heard people say, I hate it when people say, well, this is the most one that felt like Star Wars. And there's people who have been like, what does that even mean?
But it does, in a sense.
It's whatever, and when it brings back that bit of nostalgia and gets us as excited as the original films did, which this did. This was the sequel we deserved.
Episode 3 of those prequels did.
Not to me, it didn't.
It
rushed, but the finale of that, though, was wonderful.
What I mean to say is...
it's horrible what happens, but it's still
exciting. Episode 3 had more of the original type of stuff in it than the other two, and the first two were loose. And then
I still really like The Phantom Menace.
Yeah, I kind of
like we went to The Phantom Menace multiple times.
God bless you.
We are not alone, either. There are others out there.
We pray. But then there is the episode of this one, of these new ones. Right. This is my personal favorite.
This is definitely the best of these three.
But all that being said, I think every film has a good and their bad.
Yeah. Because The Last Jedi has a lot of good.
I don't know of any bad in them.
And I like, they did kind of legitimize and say, well, The Last Jedi had some story elements that were worth carrying over. And they did.
Yeah, they did.
And they paid off in this one. So it was worth some stuff. Last year you could probably edit some stuff out that was really unnecessary. Didn't pay off. Yeah, I still liked it. I watched it again though this morning, and the problem with The Last Jedi is you have a lot of stupid decisions that are made throughout the film. But every stupid decision was pretty much leading up so we could have a really awesome moment to follow it.
And I personally think this is just me personally. I could have done without the whole story. The whole
of course,
story.
We're complaining. I got to make sure we're talking Last Jedi at this point. I'm complaining about it. We need to get off of Last Jedi and move on to the
I could have done completely without that secondary story going to the
Canto Bight.
Canto Bight, whatever that is.
There's a lot of wasted stuff in that film, and they didn't even make Canto Bight important, but all the stuff that was important to The Last Jedi came to play, was important in this film, and I mean, there's a lot of interesting surprises, and they fixed some of the problems with Rey.
Oh, they sure did. It makes sense now.
It makes sense. They set up everything to where anything that you thought, well, you know, this is kind of always sits bad on me, they fixed it.
They did a lot of things.
There are a few times I was worried they were about to do something else horrible, but then they said, oh no, teased you.
Yeah.
But I don't want to say any more than that.
The other thing is, you're going to hear a lot of critics and fans too that probably are going a bit haywire and to each their own. Everybody has a right.
I've seen more fans actually saying, well, this was fun. Yeah, hey, I'm happy.
See, the thing is, too, is some people expect gold, and in reality, you're only going to get the films you love once.
Yeah.
You
just got to go in there and
whatever
say,
is your favorite,
you know what,
whether it be Phantom Menace, whether it be Empire Strikes Back like me, you can only do that once. You can't make the exact same film once. You just can't.
You just have to go and just be happy. Look, I'm getting to see a new Star Wars movie.
And it was good. It was fun.
And yeah, had a great time in there.
I've seen it three times. And it's only been out for technically one day. You know, came out Thursday night.
Yeah, Thursday night. And then Friday was the real opening day.
Yeah,
and then today's Saturday as we record this.
And I've already seen it three times. And it's fun.
That's what I did with Avengers, man. I saw that three times in a weekend.
Yeah, it's fun. It's a fun way to get away from the world. You know, it really is. And I love
this. Is the escapism we've come to expect from a Star Wars film.
That's exactly right.
Where it was epic, fairy tale, fantastic fun.
And a couple of real surprise fun cameos that you didn't
expect
to see.
Even somebody that we finally got to see out of costume, who we've seen in costume for eight films, he was out of costume. Did you spot him? I kind of nudged Heather, like, do you know who that was? I don't know if you caught him. Did you see who it was?
I'm not sure.
Well, we won't say who it was, but somebody makes an appearance for just a couple of seconds. But I was like, I know who that is. Mm-hmm. We get to see your face. We haven't got to see your face in all the eight films that you've been in. And that's all I'm going to say about that, says Forrest Gump.
Yeah.
But we laughed, we cried, because I loved 3PO got to be in the movie, and he got to be comic relief again.
Yeah.
Now, one thing, I was kind of like, oh, well, we get BB-8 along. I wanted R2-D2 along because, you know, BB-8 is supposed to be the new R2-D2, I guess. Yeah. We got BB-8 along, but it was nice having 3PO along for the main adventure to be comic relief like he's supposed to. And because they seem to underutilize the primary droids in the other two movies. In this one, he's along for the ride. Chewie got to do a lot more. I was happy.
And then D2 or whatever that is.
Yeah, the new droid.
Yeah.
Which... I was an adorable little guy.
I liked him.
I liked him.
And we actually get to have a voice, a literal.
Yeah, he didn't have a big vocabulary, but he's fun.
Yeah, he was fun.
And he was important to the story. He wasn't there just to be another cute droid.
Yeah.
He had an important part to play. And he really made you want to go and adopt a pet.
Yeah, he did.
Because, well, I can't say why, but, you know, you have a lot of people, you know, some pets set up for adoption. Maybe they had some cruel owners before and they got rescued from that, and you can give them a better home. That's what went through our head with this little droid.
He was cute.
Yeah, so I don't want to say any more than that.
A couple other cute little characters that they introduced.
Yes, I love the little guy that was the technician.
Yeah.
We won't say more about him.
Although some people say he out-cues Baby Yoda. Like,
No, he didn't. He didn't out-cue Baby Yoda.
He
was cool, though.
You know, I liked him a lot, but everyone said, Baby Yoda isn't the cutest guy in the galaxy. Hey, I beg to differ on that.
Yeah.
He's fun, but he's no Baby
and
Yoda.
And one thing, I need to go rewatch some Rebels episodes, because I'm pretty sure a particular planet was in Rebels.
Well, I just started watching that for the first
But I'm pretty sure that they threw back. Because, now, interesting, one planet that they talk about, I had always taken to be, you know, Korriban. In the Knights of the Old Republic series, that was supposed to be the Sith home planet, was Korriban. They get a different planet in there.
Oh, really?
But I think it's the same planet that has been up in Rebels, and there was a really good story arc, because it looked familiar, and I need to go rewatch it, but I think that this particular planet was featured in that series. And speaking of Rebels, there was a particular voice that had a very important part from Star Wars Rebels. He was playing his character, but you only got a voice. But it was really great. It was hard to pick out every voice that pops up in a very particularly really awesome scene. But I looked in the credits and I was like, oh, look, it's this person.
Ah.
Yep. And that's as much as I can say about it.
Oh, yeah.
But he was, you know, yeah. They connected everything from animated series into the films. It's like they wrapped everything up really
great.
Well.
They've been doing that nicely. Lately. They've been trying to even put some of our voice people, even on the Mandalorian, they put some of our voice people in there as Rebel.
Yeah, I get to let them play people. Yeah, so it's really nice to wrap everything together. Although it does, I think, add some things where, like, oh, wait, there's a story that could be told later. Mm-hmm. There's a couple stories, like, I want to see that story, because you just hinted that this happened. It's like, okay, well, now that we know this happened, can we see that story?
Some of my favorite, I'm sure most people know, but I don't want to ruin anything for anyone, so I won't even say who. But I love seeing some of the old characters coming back.
Yeah.
And it looked like they were having a blast.
Everybody seemed to be having a good time making this movie.
And I enjoyed a couple of them in particular, you know, that have been involved. And I was like, wow. To see them just like they're having so much fun. The whole every scene, one of them in particular was in, he was having so much fun that I was like, oh, I just want to hug him. It's like he's like an uncle, you know?
Yeah, well, I got to fist bump him. I was going to shake his hand. He's like, awesome. I just fist bumped that guy.
Awesome, man. That's great.
It's great. So, you want to add anything? You haven't gotten to say anything much.
No, it's hard to get a word in between you two. But anyway, just go back to, like, it felt like more like the original Star Wars that kind of started it all, because the, you know, in those, the camaraderie was so important to the storyline. And I think we talked about this, I mean, a little bit of how, you know, in some of the other movies, some of the other sequels, it seemed like everybody's on their own adventure.
Yeah.
But in this one, they really pulled together. And I think that was a lot of why it felt like like the original Star Wars.
Yeah.
And that was, I mean, for me, that was important.
Yeah. And lots of new, even some new characters that were pretty neat new characters that made me happy to introduce some characters, because they bring in a lot more interesting ideas that I'm like, ooh, I want to see where that's going to go, but we don't get to see where it goes. That's why I'm like, there's still more stories can be told.
Mm-hmm. And I have a feeling.
But new type of creatures, new aliens, new races.
Oh, I have a feeling, though. There's a few hints at the end. I know that this is the end of the Skywalker saga.
But there's new sagas to be had.
That's it. And there's a hint or two. Let's go see what this is. There is some hints about that. I'm sure you caught some of that. There's a hint or two that just because it's the end of that
saga, it's the beginning of new stories. Mm-hmm. Definitely some new stories, because somebody wants to say something and they said to somebody else. And I'm like, uh-huh. And we're noticing that you're noticing things there. Uh-huh.
So just because
we've seen the new school of Jedi.
Yeah.
We've seen them.
And we've seen some things. Okay, see, that's one thing I'll say, too, about the, we already mentioned it, but The Last Jedi, one reason why they did spend some time at that other planet, Cantobai, or whatever it was called, was because he was going to introduce us to these little children. His whole idea was he was originally, I don't know if he still is or not, but Johnson, or whatever his name was.
Ryan Johnson. Supposed to still be writing his own new stories.
He was originally going to make these movies, and if I remember right, what I read was he was going to make it about this young man who was a Jedi.
You know, we haven't really gotten any details about what he's working on. We do know the two guys from Game of Thrones that were supposed to be doing like a Old Republic-style movie. Something has kind of kicked that around, and I don't think they're even working on anything anymore. But we are still expecting perhaps we're going to get some movies set in the Old Republic.
Mm-hmm.
Because people have been excited for that idea ever since Knights of the Republic and the online games and stuff. So people are excited about, because a lot of, with these movies, they are pulling stuff that was from the books, some of the good stuff from the books, and said, well, there's elements of that are really neat. We need to put those back in some fashion.
Yeah, because they still do include some of the legends as fact. Like, you know, Thrawn is still involved.
Yeah, Thrawn is, they just have a new way to look at Thrawn, a different way. But it's like, he's still the same character, but now he's got different stories. There's lots of new stories, and I'm excited to see what more could happen. You know, more animated series.
One thing I read that I thought was very cool.
My nose itches.
They're talking about the legends, and they said that some of the legends will be thought of as fact, and some of the legends of those people aren't necessarily real. And I thought, that's interesting. But then I started thinking, you know, there's some truth about that in our own truth.
Yeah.
Because you hear legends about, we'll just use Lincoln as
tall tales.
Tall tales about Lincoln that aren't necessarily true. For instance, George Washington.
Yeah.
He didn't have wooden teeth. But we've heard it so long that we think it to be real.
Yeah.
People talk about being real.
They dove into in The Last Jedi that actually was interesting, where Luke was just like, okay, well, there's this legend of Luke Skywalker. He just shows up with his laser sword and just going to destroy the entire First Order by himself. It's like, that's the legend. But I liked what that film at least did say, where he's like, you know, I'm the reality of it.
Yeah.
And I can't live up to this legend. It seemed to be a lot of his mentality. But yet at the end, we see how those events that happen do feed legend, and legends bring hope.
Yeah.
So it's like kind of give that support. It's like, yeah, so the legends are important. And I like, I can't say in the middle, but I do like that that did resolve nicely where Luke got a new, well, of course, Luke got a new perspective because Yoda showed up and said, all right, you still got something to learn, kid.
Yeah, I like that.
So, but I like that, that resolution.
One of my favorite things about The Force Awakens, going back to that whole legend thing, The Force Awakens, I love whatever she said, I can't remember the exact fact of what it was. He said 12 parsecs, and he or 14, and he said 12. But I like how he corrected her.
Yeah,
it's just hilarious because he would have thought Han would have wanted to go up, not back.
No, but he wanted to have it less time, so it takes less time.
Oh, I see.
So going from 14, so no, not 14, 12.
Yeah,
get it right. I'm faster than you think. And there's a great nod to that one. I love the moment in the movie. It's just like, yeah, Liz, I got to get over there quick. Yeah, well, I'm in a faster ship.
Yeah.
You know? And zip! I was like, yeah! Go get him, dude! I won't say. There were so many great moments that I was just like,
well, you mentioned the hope, and that's another theme in this one.
Yeah.
Because that was something that was in the originals, was the hope.
Yeah.
You know, and that also plays in.
Rebellions are built on hope.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I like
good movie.
Yeah, I like that there was that theme, that feeling.
And I liked even the line is like, well, evil darkness wants you to feel like you're by yourself.
That's so true.
That is very, very true. They want you to feel alone.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I've been feeling that a lot. I know how that goes. Yeah.
And you're never alone.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Because there are always someone. Well, no matter how you're feeling, there is somebody out there that loves you.
Amen.
Mm-hmm. So, because there are people, you know, I'm going to get a suicide prevention week or something here, but there's people, you know, you hit that point, but I guarantee you, somebody cares about you.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
You are important. You matter.
Exactly,
you are
right.
Valuable, and there's my soapbox for the day.
No
matter what you might be feeling, just know it's true that you are loved.
That's right.
You just sometimes don't always see it. Some people aren't good at showing it either. That does, just because they don't always show it the way that you expect doesn't mean they don't love you.
That's right.
There you go. And there's my soapbox and my happiness. I feel like I hit that last week with Mr. Rogers, because Mr. Rogers had some good lessons in that movie, too.
Yes. Yeah, lessons you learned from Mr. Rogers. Yes. That was really bad, terrible Yoda impersonation.
All right, but that's about a 20-minute review on our overall consensus. Is see it again,
yep.
And smile and have some fun because it's Star Wars.
Don't listen to the haters. Don't listen to the naysayers. You judge for yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And just go in there and just thinking,
yes.
You know what? It's a Star Wars movie. Star Wars is fun. Let me go and have fun.
Galaxy Far
Bring your
away.
Friends and have a good time together. And buy goofy souvenirs like lightsaber slushy cups, because those are cool. Those are great. Oh, come on. Admit that wasn't fun to drink a slushy out of a lightsaber.
But where are we going to store it after?
I don't care. We're just going to have fun drinking out of them. Those are great. They're so much fun. Oh, come on. Yeah.
Be twin again.
To Disney and beyond.
So many of you probably listen to Diz Radio because, my gosh, he's got a ton of listeners. And hopefully some of you have checked it out when I have mentioned that I do a Disney history segment on Diz Radio. Eric, did you ever go and check out Diz Radio when I mentioned I was on there?
Yeah, I have. Great show.
Yep, it's a lot of fun. He gets to interview a lot of fun people, has a lot of, you know, fun people on there doing all kinds of different segments, some of them pretty funny. They're all pretty informative. There's such a weird variety of all these different people that he's assembled in this team. And then I try not to be the boring one. But so Jonathan Johnson, say hello.
Hello, everybody. Good to be here.
Everybody loves Rankin Bass. I mean, if you don't love Rankin Bass, then you must not have seen any of their stuff. So I'm a part of a fan group that I guess you're the admin. I don't know if you started it, but it's labeled as being the official Rankin Bass site or Facebook page for a podcast, although I can't find a podcast. But you've been posting about this book that you have been collaborating on, giving some history of Rankin Bass. What's this book about?
Yes. Well, first off, yes, I did create that Rankin Bass group on Facebook. Yeah, it is the official Facebook group for Rankin Bass Classics. And there was a podcast. We pulled it off for a while, and it is relaunching in 2020 as the official podcast for Rankin Bass.
Nice.
So with that said, I am working with, you know, a friend of mine, Rick Goldschmidt, who's the official historian of Rankin Bass, and his associate, Wes Garlatz, and myself have put together this book for the 50th anniversary of Frosty the Snowman. I mean, true classic, yeah. Animated special everybody loves. So it's basically a 50th anniversary scrapbook edition. So there's some history, some tidbits, and a lot of great full color imagery of the making of and hand sketches and drawings and going into the history and the merchandise and everything for wow. this classic that's been passed down.
Nice.
Has there been some other books you guys have put out as well, or is this the first?
No, there's a variety of different books. There's The Enchanted World of Rankin-Bass. There's also Mad Monster Party, you know, which is the great Halloween special that many people have overlooked that was basically Tim Burton's, you know, inspiration for Nightmare yeah. Before Christmas. So there's a variety of books out there. There's the Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer anniversary book that came out last year. And, of course, now this as well. So there's a variety of different books that are on the market.
Oh, well, there's more books now I got to add to my library. How did I miss out on this last year? Because I've been a member of this group for a long time. I think that's this might be how I came across and first met you from this group. I don't remember.
You know, I'm not sure. It is a second love of mine next to Disney, yeah. you know. So,
oh, yeah.
you know, it could be. But Rankin-Bass just has that Disney-esque feel about it. That's yeah. the thing is there's something about them that is – special, memorable. You curl up with your family, you're listening to the songs. It just has this timeless feel that even though yeah. it ages, you can tell it's aging, it still just feels timeless.
Yeah, the age is what kind of makes it special, because you know the animation with the stop motion is just a little clunky compared to when you look at The Nightmare Before Christmas, for example, and how the strides in stop motion has just really advanced, and the new ideas that they're doing even with you know, they did I can't pronounce it. It's like giant IQ something. You know what I mean? Though, but they did the Kubo and the Two Strings.
Yes, there's a lot of
yeah,
and there's a lot of good stop motion out there too. From mm-hmm. you know, Coraline and Nightmare yeah. Before Christmas, James and the Giant Peach.
Mm-hmm.
Kubo Studios. I mean, there's just so many good ones out there. It's a great art form.
Yeah, so when you look at the old Rankin-Bass, they, in a way, you could say it looks a little janky compared to what they can do now, but there's just something about the jankiness that makes it special.
Definitely, yeah, it is. You know, well, there's something about it that makes it special, and I think it's because it has this childlike innocence to it, mm-hmm. as opposed to some of the newer stop-motion animation. I think it has that sparkle, that twinkle, that, you know, when you're a kid, it's magical. When you're an adult, it brings you back to this time of being simple.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Not to say that I was simple-minded back then, but...
I'm simple-minded now because, you know, that's just keeps things nice and easy in life, right?
Oh, who wants an easy life? Me.
Right. Well, you know, in Rankin-Bass, just there's so much stuff that they have done. I mean, of course, you have the Frosty 50th book, right? 50 years, Frosty the Snowman. But there are so many other things, you know, from Rankin-Bass that people forget that they have created from.
Oh, yeah.
You know, there's Jack Frost.
Love it.
I mean, I can just go through the Christmas specials. And then you have the true sequel to Frosty the Snowman, Frosty's Winter Wonderland, because that Frosty's Returns that they always bundled with the DVDs, that wasn't even made by Rankin-Bass. That's a knockoff, horrible. That's not even the true sequel.
Is that the one with John Goodman in it?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
And it wasn't that great.
Produced. Right. And then you have, like I said, you have Jack Frost. You have the story of the first Easter Rabbit, which has a connection to Christmas there because Burl Ives plays an Easter Bunny. Santa Claus saves the day. You also have the first Easter Snow with Angela Lansbury. You know, The Year Without a Santa Claus, Pinocchio's Christmas, The Leprechaun's Christmas Gold, Rudolph and Frosty's Christmas in July. I mean, there's so many Rankin-Bass specials. There's even in the early 90s, they had Santa Baby, which was an animated special that was targeting kind of like the Fat Albert kind of demographic group.
I did not know about that one. Of course, there's a lot of these I didn't know about, really. Like that Leprechaun one, I didn't know anything about until I think you posted a picture in the Facebook group about it. And I was like, there was a Leprechaun Christmas one?
Yes, and that was great because you can't go wrong with an island of leprechauns, a story of a banshee coming, and, you know, trying to get it. I don't even want to spoil it. It's really good. It's fun to watch. Pinocchio's Christmas is always a good one. I love watching that one. And like I said, the first Christmas snow is definitely one I love. I mean, Angela Lansbury plays a nun. It's about this blind boy who loses his Christmas spirit. All he wants is to see again. And of course, there's a Christmas miracle on the first snowfall of the winter.
Oh my! Yeah, see, Rankin Bass is really good. They pull in the heartstrings. I think this is where John Lasseter and Pixar must have learned it from. Because especially Nestor, the long-eared donkey.
Oh well, you know, and you gotta love Nestor. And then you know, then there's always the debate: which one is the true donkey that carried Mary, right? Because then you have Nestor, the long-eared donkey, which is classic Rankin Bass. But then you have Small One from Disney. Classic animated Don Bluth. Yeah, which donkey really carried Mary?
And which I think you told me about Small One last year, and I never have gotten a chance to see it.
Yes. So, you know, they're
asking you about it. Like, oh my goodness, what's this?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, if you want to delve into diverging origins and timelines, you know, we've got the Legend of Santa Claus versus Santa Claus is Coming to Town.
Which are both Rankin Bass.
Exactly.
Right, yeah. The Life and Adventures of Santa Claus. Which to me, you know, everyone says it's great, it's endearing, they love it. Mm-hmm. I enjoy watching it.
Yep.
I own it. You know, of course I had to own it. But I still think it is so out there. You can tell that it's written by Frank Baum.
Yeah. Which I haven't watched that in a long time, but I did. I've got an old VCR that I hooked up downstairs, and I found a videotape that actually has that special on it. But I was kind of just checking what all was on it as I fell asleep, and I'm going to have to pull it back out and watch it because I always did love that one because I love the weird, fantastic elements of it, of all these different little, you know, spirits of different things, you know, and the wind demon and all these crazy characters.
The Great Auk. And...
Yeah.
It's right. Well, wild. Yeah. It's a good one. I mean, and the book is definitely good. And, you know, a lot of some of those things were based off of books. I mean, you have The Year Without a Santa Claus, which is actually based off of a book initially, you know, and that was it was a great children's book that they made into the special with the Snow Miser and Heat Miser. And, you know, and of course, Snow Miser and them got to reprise their roles years later in The Miser Brothers Christmas, which was not Rankin Bass.
Yep, that's but why they I didn't did watch it.
But they did make it stop motion, paid homage to it. You know, it was good. And then you had the live action coming all the way back to John Goodman again.
Yep.
With Year Without a Santa Claus when he was in the live action adaptation of that as well.
I didn't get very far trying to watch that one. It didn't have the same charm.
No, it was like a made for TV freeform movie, it felt like. But you know, it was there. You know, but there are some great things with Rankin Bass. I mean, in the holiday times, I mean, there's a lot of good ones. I mean, who can forget the Thundercats Christmas?
Apparently I didn't know that existed.
Well, you know, it was in the series. It was one of the episodes in the seasons.
Nice.
When the Thundercats celebrated the holidays, you know, so you can't go wrong with Lion-O celebrating the holidays. And people forget that that's Rankin Bass.
Yeah. Then see, I never really watched much of the Thundercats. Because it was on at about a time that I wanted to go outside and play when I was a kid. But I loved Silverhawks, which was pretty much Thundercats in space.
Right. Silverhawks is really good, too. Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, but the Rankin Bass specials. I mean, like I said, during Christmas, there's so much stuff. I mean, Jack Frost.
I love that one.
Here's the thing. You can watch that for Christmas or for Groundhog's Day.
Yeah.
True.
Right. It has that nice that parallel going on, you know, but then all the other ones that people forget, like Mad Monster Party. I love Mad Monster Party,
which I have never seen. I'd heard of it until you might have been the one that told me that it existed.
Well, you can't go wrong with voices from Boris Karloff, Phyllis Diller. I mean, all these great names behind it, you know, so, you know, and then you get into the Easter specials. The first Easter Rabbit, Easter Bunny's Coming to Town, Here Comes Peter Cottontail. I mean, that list goes on and on right there. You know, so there's always so many different elements that they have for all these different specials. And then, of course, you have stuff with like Haley Mills bringing it back to Disney with The Daydreamer.
Did not know about that one.
So, yes, it is a great one. it's not a seasonal one, not a special. It is its own entity based off of a lot of great fairy tales. I'll just leave it at that. You want to check it out. It's a really good one. And Haley Mills is one of the main voices throughout the entire piece.
Yeah, how did Rankin Bass manage to get such great voice talent? I mean, Fred Astaire and, I mean, Burl Ives.
Jimmy Durante.
Yeah. Great voices.
I would love to know how they got through that. I mean, especially because it's at a time when old time radio was like kind of fading out. So now you're getting these big names who were old time radio stars. I mean, you think of the Whale in like Rudolph and Frosty's Shiny New Year or Rudolph's Shiny New Year, you know, and I just listened to him and I'm like, oh, that's the great Gildersleeve from, you know, indeed. OTR, you know? So it's like, I think they might have gotten some of these names just because OTR was kind of on that downward spiral. So it's like, let's get these legends to participate.
Yeah, and that might be part of the appeal of why I love old-time radio is because I know the voices when I hear them, you know? Because I watch all these specials.
Right, you know? And you know, things like Rudolph and all that stuff, it is just, I don't know. To me, it's just one of those things where I can get past the, you know, what is it? It's probably, 24 frames a second at that point?
Yeah.
You know, just because it's great, memorable music. And that's where you get into all that music by Maury Laws and all those guys where it is just so catchy, where you're just, you know, singing along and everything else. I mean, it's true, as they put it, Anna Magic.
Yeah. The great songs. The stories were simple and pure. They're just charming.
Well, I don't know about pure. They did go out on a limb. I mean, how many elf dentists are you aware of?
Well, I mean, the pure innocence of just
there you go.
Has that gee golly fairy tale magic in everything, and it's they were just special and just filled with such charm that no matter how old I get, I just can't. I gotta love and watch them. And I kind of wonder, do they have like more volume collections where you can get about everything that they've put out? Because there's so much that I still have never actually seen. I've got a few things that I've collected, and I even have a nice anniversary of Rudolph where they had that deleted scene that explains that, the name just went right out of my head. But he was looking for like peppermint, what he was mining for.
Oh yeah,
right, with the original song, yes.
Yeah,
yes.
You got Cornelius, and now, having now, that little scene where he finally goes out and finds some peppermint.
Well, you know, and the funny thing is, you know, most of their stuff has been divided up through so many different studios. I don't know if we'll ever get a true collection. But if you are looking for a good Christmas collection, a DVD set came out probably 5 years ago called like Christmas Classics Collection or something like that. It's four discs. It's like $20 on Amazon.
Nice.
And it has the Grinch, you know, which isn't Rankin Bass.
Right.
But everything else on there other than the Grinch and Mr. Magoo is all Rankin Bass. So it has Leprechaun's Christmas Gold, Frosty's Winter Wonderland, Rudolph and Frosty Christmas in July. I mean, it has many of them that I named earlier for the holidays. So, I mean, that is a good collection that you can get there. You know, but getting them all would be hard. I mean, especially everything that they've created. I mean, you think back even to the 80s and go back to, you know, the awesome, you know, 1982 and let's get to The Last Unicorn. I mean, that's an awesome animated movie. Beautiful. Beautifully done, the score. I mean, that's the, you know, and then, you know, then they have their first movies that they've ever done, which is like Willie McBean and his Magic Machine. And then they did The Wacky World of Mother Goose. There's just so many different things that they have done over the years, even down to the Smokey the Bear stop motion.
Huh. I don't know if I remember any of those.
And, you know, yes.
The Last Unicorn, is that still on Netflix? I have been meaning to watch that, and I still haven't watched it.
I don't know. I own the Blu-ray, so, you know, I still like having physical content for true collections like these, where you know that they will fall off streaming services at some point.
Oh, I know. I'm looking for my own copy of Flight of Dragons, so.
Oh, Flight of the Dragons, yes. Wow. Yes, definitely. Well, you know, and there's so many different things to add to these collections that I physically want. Also, you know, the Little Drummer Boy.
And then, I love that one.
And people always forget Little Drummer Boy Book 2.
Yeah.
It was the sequel. You know, so you had that one as well that everybody forgets those. And it's like, well, those are really good ones. And then,
yeah.
You know, Danny Kaye, right? You know, great, mm-hmm. great storyteller. And there was the Enchanted World of Danny Kaye where he did The Emperor's New Clothes.
Huh.
That was all Rankin Bass stop motion. So, I mean, it's there's so many good things that they have done that, I mean, The Stingiest Man in Town. I mean, that is a great animated classic.
Man, there's just so many that I probably there's probably more that I haven't seen than there are that I have seen.
Well, here's a rare one that people forget for Rankin Bass. I know it's Christmas. I should be talking Christmas, but. The Coneheads. They did the Coneheads animated special in 1983.
Wow.
Whoa. Was it even voiced by like Jane Curtin and Dan Aykroyd?
Yes, it was.
Oh, man.
It is awesome when you see it, and it looks like an animated Rankin Bass version of Conehead Dan Aykroyd.
Oh. I'm going to search for this on YouTube now.
Yeah, so they have created a lot of good stuff. I mean, the Jackson 5, the Osmonds, they did all those, the Festival Family Classics, and those are just the animated ones. You know, and then, of course, The Hobbit and Return of the King.
Yeah, yeah.
Although I don't think Return of the King was very good. The Hobbit is fantastic.
I don't think the live-action Return of the King is very good. I'm one of the few in the minority. It won all the awards, but I only say it won all the awards because it was the last one in the series and the other ones didn't.
Yeah, I think they did stack them all on the last one just because they were to me, those awards were meant for all three films.
Right. It was more, the other ones didn't really win as much as we wanted and they're not making anymore. We better award them with something.
Yeah. And yeah, Return of the King might be one of the lesser ones because they stretched it out so much with the slow motion.
But but the holiday specials, you know, like I said, there's a lot of good ones. I personally also love Twas the Night Before Christmas.
Oh yes, yes. Mm-hmm. I'm glad to see that one's getting a lot more play recently than it has in previous years.
Yes. You know, and I grew up listening to the LP of Twas the Night Before Christmas, along with Frosty's Winter Wonderland, which was on Disneyland Records.
Nice. I'll have to look for those now, too. But let's see, Twas the Night Before Christmas. That's the one with the mice and the clock tower and stuff, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. They have to play the special song for Santa so he doesn't ignore their town anymore.
Oh, wow. That is a great one. Oh, man. I'm going to end up just having to spend the rest of my evening going watching these now.
Well, like I said, it's Rankin Bass, aside from Disney, is definitely a second love of mine, which is why in 2020 we're going to bring back the official Rankin Bass podcast where we're going to go in depth in a lot of these things. So it is going to be a fun one because it's going to be with myself, Wes Garlatz, and of course, the official historian of Rankin Bass, Rick Goldschmidt.
Wow. All right.
Got a journey into the new territories, like Mouse on the Mayflower from Rankin Bass.
Oh, yes. Well, heck, yeah. I was trying to think of the guy's name, but, you know, there was, speaking of a Disney connection, up in Marceline when they do Toon Fest every year, there was one time they had, as a guest, this older gentleman who, he was, I think, art direction, I believe he worked on with Rankin Bass, and he was a very old guy, and I was sitting there there's this really great cafe in there in Marceline, and I was sitting there eating lunch, and I recognized him from his picture in the like this little newspaper that he put out, that he came in, and I looked at Heather, and like, that's the guy who worked at Rankin Bass. I kind of wanted to go meet him, but I was like, I was still new to podcasting, so I wasn't used to introducing myself to people. I wanted to just go and shake his hands and thank him for all his work, but I was kind of like, but he's in here to have lunch. I don't want to disturb him. He's eating his lunch, but I kind of regret that I didn't have the guts to just go up and shake his hand and meet him because that might have been the only chance I get because he had to have some help kind of getting around. They helped him kind of into a seat and asked him what he wanted, and I was like, yeah, he's really getting up there in years, you know, and a lot of those guys who worked on it, I don't know how many of them are left.
Right. There's not many. Just a couple of years ago, we're constantly losing them left and right, which is very sad. And, you know, it is one of those things. I have a few autographs of my own that I cherish, like Maury Laws, Paul Coker, a few of those, you know, so I cherish some of those. You know, it's much like the Disney community. As we all get older, we're losing some of these icons.
Yep. So, considering that Mari here, he was quite the musical genius. Where did he come from? Do we know much more? Like, I mean, how did he start writing for Rankin-Bass? Was he writing music, in any other market before getting on with Rankin-Bass? Because, I mean, those songs are, like, some of the best songs ever. Well, at least for Christmas specials. But, I mean, still, you can't not enjoy. I've not heard a single song on one of these specials that was not great. I mean, that guy was a musical genius. He's the John Williams of Christmas specials.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, the thing is he created a sound for them. I think that's really what it comes down to, is he created the sound of Rankin-Bass. You know, I think that's really where it comes into play, is it's kind of, you know, between, you know, Jules Bass, Maury Laws, Arthur Rankin, all these guys. I think it just comes really down to they created this sound, this look, this feel, and really defined it. It wasn't like bringing in all these unknowns. It was always the same names attached to everything all the time. And I think that's where the magic came in, is these guys were like, this is our baby. This is what we're going to create. And this is the sound we're going to go with. And this is what we're going to do. And I'm like stumbling over it, because it's just one of those where it truly was magical. Like you said, he was that icon. I mean, in everything he did, from Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, Return to Oz, he also did Little Drummer Boy. I mean, everything for Rankin-Bass was just this true piece of magic and this true artistry, I guess. I mean, the biggest thing is, I mean, from what I know of, is he was hired, from what I know, because I am not the true historian of Maury Laws, I'll say that much, you know. But I do know that he was hired as the music director originally for Rankin-Bass. And it was one of those where he was hired to come on board, create a sound, and that turned into, you know, 30-plus year career with the company.
Yeah.
And surprisingly, I did have a chance to meet him face-to-face, sit down with him, talk with him, because he actually, well, when he passed away earlier this year, actually, in March of 2019. I had a chance of meeting him late 2017, because where he lives is actually only about an hour from where I live.
Wow.
So I reached out to him numerous times, took the drive, and had the pleasure of just sitting down with him and meeting him.
Wow. Yeah, because basically his music and his sound goes with Rankin-Bass the way Paul Williams' music goes with the Muppets.
Yes, I agree with that. And, you know, when Paul Williams came back to do Letters to Santa for the Muppets, I'm like, this sounds like the Muppets.
Yes, definitely.
So that's getting into a whole nother realm of Christmas specials I could talk about. The different cuts and variations of Muppet Family Christmas, how the DVD is edited from the aired version.
Yep.
Oh, man, I could go on and on with Muppet Christmas specials and all those things. Or how the Christmas toy is basically the true inspiration for Toy Story.
Oh, yeah.
You know, just like Cars is ripped off from Doc Hollywood. You know, just...
Which I hadn't thought of until... Were you the one that... Maybe it was one of your posts on Facebook. I saw that today, like that Cars was basically Doc Hollywood, and I stopped and thought about it. I'm like, oh my gosh, it totally is.
Well, and it was Hollywood Pictures, so Disney owned it.
Yeah. Stuff I hadn't really thought of, but that's very spot on.
I could open a Pandora's box, you know. a slightly different Jonathan than you hear on Diz Radio, where I'm playing the straight guy, just getting us through the show, you know. If you want to open a Pandora's box of pop culture, media, Comic Cons, movies, TV specials, oh man, you're entering a realm.
Well, see, now that just means you have to come over here, because we get pretty eclectic over here sometimes. I mean, heck, last week was just Mr. Rogers, because I saw the new movie, which, by the way, I've got to say again, if you have not seen Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood, bring tissues and go.
Definitely. I that was a great movie. It's all about finding that 6 degrees, because everything is connected in some way. You love Rankin-Bass? Okay. Disneyland Records released those LPs, you know, so there's so many different things that you can pull into all different elements.
And one name, Paul Frees.
Oh, yeah.
Icon right there.
Right there. You know,
Yes, Rankin Bass,
Hanna-Barbera, and all over at Disney.
Yes, you can't go wrong. Paul Frees is distinguishable voice no matter what.
And when you think about it, he really only had maybe three or four different voices he did, but he was just so good at it
that well, you
he
know,
could reuse them.
Right. He's kind of like Christopher Walken. You know, Paul Frees played Paul Frees. It's just right. You liked him so much and you liked his voice, you didn't care.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he was a really good actor, though, too. But even if the character sounded the same way as you heard like five other characters, he was good at being a different character with that same voice.
Yes, definitely. That is true. So it's yeah, he was an icon. So yeah Rankin Bass specials though. I do have to say, you guys got to go out there and track down some of these other ones like Stingiest Man in Town. I would say a good starting point for most of them you haven't seen is to get that DVD collection.
Yeah.
I actually think I've seen it on sale at Target this season as well.
Yeah, I think Target still has a few. You just got to make sure you get the right one. There's one where it says Christmas right. Classics, but it's like six movies, mm-hmm. and that's it. You got to. It's a red box. It's from like 5-6 years ago, and it'll say Christmas Classics Collection, and it's like, I don't know, 12 to 14 different specials. It's four discs. Everything's crammed on. It has everything from "Twas the Night Before Christmas," Frosty's Winter Wonderland, all that stuff. So it has a lot of those obscure ones that you're not going to see. And then, of course, they tacked on the Grinch on there and Mr. Magoo, which you're like, okay, whatever.
Hey, you know, I mean, we all need our Razzleberry dressing.
I mean, they're great. I do love the Grinch, and I love Mr. Magoo's Christmas Carol. But minus those two, it's a Rankin and Bass, you know, collection. So it's a good starting point for people, especially to dip their toe into something beyond Santa Claus is Coming to Town, Rudolph, and Frosty. Cricket on the Hearth is a great animated classic. I forgot to even mention that one.
I think I've seen that, but I'm not sure. It sounds so familiar. Cricket on the Hearth.
Well, you know, it's good to know, though, that there are resources out there. You know, we do have access to all of these classics. And so, you know, it's a great thing that they are out there and we can reach out. And, you know, sometimes, you know, don't want to say necessarily do a YouTube search, but there's a lot of stuff out there.
Indeed, there is. If anybody wants to come and check out your regular show, Diz Radio, Diz Ninjas was a thing you were doing for a while. Is that back?
Diz Ninjas never went away. The podcast went away for some time, which is relaunching as well in 2020. But Diz Ninjas is actually, you know, health fitness group where it's mental health, physical health, biking, running, martial arts, whatever you want it to be. Just there's no telling you how to be healthy or anything. Like I said, even mental health. But the Diz Ninjas group is fully active on Facebook as well. And we are relaunching the podcast in a totally different format where we're going to do it more as mental nuggets of inspiration that you will find twice a week in quick 15-minute podcasts.
Which I probably need. I'm about to start exercising. I got myself a new membership at Anytime Fitness. Set up right next to the radio station, I get it for free, so it's kind of nice. So I am all set. I'm going to get back and exercise, and I'm going to work this gut out, and I'm going to build my core strength so I do not injure my back next time I pick something up.
Fantastic.
So I have a plan. I have a plan. All righty, but I guess we better wrap this up. So thanks for coming on to the show and talking some Rankin Bass from us. This was fun.
Thank you for having me on, and of course, being part of the D team. And if anybody does want to find me, you can find me at Diz Radio, DizRadio.com. I'm not going to give you all the Facebook tags and all that kind of fun brouhaha. Just go to DizRadio.com. You'll find it all right there. Keep it nice and simple. And if you want to find more about Rankin and Bass, you can definitely find any of the books and items at miserbros.com. That's miserbros.com. Or you can join the very active, always fun Rankin Bass Facebook group, which is the Rankin Bass Classics on Facebook.
Thank you for listening to the Neverland Podcast.
We invite you back next week for more fun and adventure.
Until then, remember to keep a pixie in your pocket.
It's that young at heart, positive attitude that you can share with others.
And remember to visit our website at neverlandpodcast.com.
There you can find links to our news page, our shop,
our contact page, where you can easily send an email to podcast@neverlandpodcast.com.
You can also find our Neverlanders page, where you can find out how to become an official Lost Boy or Pixie, because girls are too clever to get lost.
Become a real Neverlander.
Please feel free to leave us a voicemail at 816-226-6492.
And be sure to follow us on Twitter at NeverlandPCast.
And like our Neverland Podcast fan page on Facebook.
We also have a group on Facebook for you to join.
We also appreciate your support to keep the Neverland Podcast up and running.
Visit patreon.com/NeverlandPodcast to donate to keeping the pixie dust alive.
Copyright content featured on the Neverland Podcast is copyright of their respective creators and used under fair use license.
All original content is copyright of Glue Band Productions, and a very special thanks to Yeehaw Bob Jackson at yeehawbob.com for our new ending music.
God bless!
Yeah! Hello, everybody, this is Yeehaw Bob Jackson. Neverland Podcast, we love you. Neverland Podcast, we love you. Neverland Podcast, it's true. Neverland Podcast, we love you. Yeah!
For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Stop in and save big money on your next outdoor lumber project now at Menards. Menards has the largest selection of AC2 pressure-treated lumber and decking, and it's easy to load in our outdoor lumber yard. Plus, you can get free estimates fast with our deck design program in-store or on Menards.com. Check out our weekly flyer for more great deals happening now at Menards.
Save